If you have your Bibles, open them to Titus chapter 2, if you would. You'd find this in a pew Bible on page 1181. There is a YouVersion Live event, so if you brought your tablet or your smartphone, you can follow along there with the text and a bit of the outline. Kind of the same thing that is on the PowerPoint will be on your phone. Maybe a little bit more for you to write about there, something to interact with. Leadership. You know, leadership is a pretty popular thing. It has been for the past decade or two. Colleges and seminaries have classes on leadership, and probably in the 1800s that wasn't the case. You can get a master's degree in organizational leadership if you'd like to. They give that, and you could get a doctorate in it, even. You can also find leadership coaches, guys that would coach you, and our district superintendent has his coach that he uses. It's provided for him, and they spend time on the phone every day, and that guy actually makes his living spending time on the phone coaching people in leadership positions. That's a pretty cool thing because we value leadership. The Perry Noble Leadership Podcast is one of the most popular podcasts for Christian leaders on the internet, and a lot of people are tuning in to hone their skill at leadership. And it's kind of ironic if you think about it, probably in our day and age, more information is available on how to be a good leader than previously, maybe than ever before, and yet we see over and over and over again leadership failures. We see them in politics. I mean, it's to the point now when you hear that a senator, a congressman, even a president has some kind of a failure in leadership, you just kind of shrug your shoulders and say, yeah, I've seen that for years and years and years. Doesn't matter which group they're with. Just happens. You see it in ministry, pastoral ministry. And I talked about that a little bit earlier, how those letters marked confidential or letters I never even want to open. You even see it among international workers. And there are missionaries that I know who have had to come home, not because the work was done, not because someone at home was sick, but because they had messed up in leadership. And it's very troubling. Some of these people who mess up in leadership, they have a whole toolbox of leadership skills. When you look at them, you would say, wow, I wish that I could lead like that person can lead. But on some of the most basic levels, they fail. Now, the Bible addresses leadership over and over again. It talks about leadership at length, and one of the places it does it is in our text today. If you've been following along, you know that Titus is receiving this letter that is written by Paul, and God is saying, Paul, this is what this young pastor leader needs to know. And he's talked to him about a number of things. 2 weeks ago, we kind of talked about how men need to really aim at some important things in order to be good men. And then last week, we talked about the atmosphere that a woman can create and how God has gifted her, and she has a power that's very important for the kingdom. And then today, we're talking about how God tells Titus to lead. When you look at the text, you're going to say, I don't know, I think this is about young men, but just like one phrase applies to young men. The rest of it is to Titus, where God is saying, Titus, this is who you need to be, and this is how you need to lead if you're going to serve me well as a leader. So your Bibles are open to Titus chapter 2. We're just going to read 3 verses, 6, 7, and 8, and you can pick up, he's talked about, here's how to handle older men, here's how to lead women, and now verse 6, similarly, encourage young men to be self-controlled. That's the end of the counsel to young men. And then in verse 7, he talks about, here's how to lead as you do that, Titus. In everything, set them an example by doing what is good. In your teaching, show integrity, seriousness, and soundness of speech that cannot be condemned, so that those who oppose you may be ashamed, because they have nothing bad to say about us. Titus, this is how I want you to lead. This is how a good leader should function, should even behave. And we're going to look at the text in some detail, but before we do that, I'm going to say something that anybody who's tried to lead knows. Leadership is tricky. It's tricky in terms of manipulation, because sometimes it's really hard to discern whether a person is leading this group of people or the person is manipulating this group of people. And it's even hard as a leader sometimes to discern, which am I doing? Am I really leading these people, or am I being manipulative toward these people? And there is a difference. It's one of those differences that's kind of like, I'm not really sure I know how to describe it, but I know it when I see it. I know what the difference is when I see it. Maybe you could think of the difference in these terms. Manipulators tend to interact with the group they're leading so that they themselves will benefit the most from it. So I'm leading this group of people so that I can be important, so that I can get money, so that I can receive honor, so I can feel good about myself. That would be a manipulative style. But on the other hand, leaders who interact with you so that they benefit along with you, So both the leader and the one who's being led, that's more of a godly leader. And it's kind of a task that you're being led to that you really wouldn't have been able to do without the leader. It's a task that you're being led to that the leader wouldn't have been able to do without you, and so it's kind of a win-win thing when leadership is happening well. But sometimes, if you lose sight of people and focus too much on the task, manipulation is really right around the corner. Leadership's tricky. It's tricky because of the question of motivation. Why do we want to be a leader? You know, over the past couple weeks, our nation talked about, the talking heads on the news, talked about appointing an Ebola czar. Have you seen that? And I guess they appointed someone, I'm not sure who that is. I didn't pay a lot of attention to it. But when I first started talking about, we need an Ebola czar, I thought, man, whoever takes that job is crazy. Here's why. Number one, if nothing bad happens, then wow, what a waste that position was. And if the worst happens, it's going to be his fault. Some Ebola czar he was. And so it's a no-win situation for him. In fact, I think that wanting that job should exclude that person by reason of insanity, you know, if you want the Ebola job, right? Why would anyone want to be a leader? Some seek leadership because they want to prestige. I want to have that prestige. I want to have that position. Some people seek leadership because they think it's an easier path. If I become a leader, then I won't have to carry a shovel. That'll be good. Yeah. Some want the power and the authority. And there are many, many other reasons, none of which are good reasons in the kingdom to seek a position of leadership. Because in the kingdom, the motivation for leadership, as Jesus expresses it, is a motivation to serve others. He sees leadership as serving others. He gets his 12 together. He's going to the cross in just a few hours. And he takes off his outer garment, wraps himself with a towel, and washes their feet. And then he says this, do you see what I just did? Do you see what I just did? You know, the leaders of the Gentiles, they do it for prestige and they like to lord it over and they want the position and they don't want to have to carry a shovel. But I am among you as one who is a servant. Leadership, God sees, is servanthood. And that's one of the reasons leadership is so tricky. It's tricky because of the question of your manipulation, your motivation, and your reputation as well, because leadership involves having a good reputation. Well, you can have a bad reputation and be a leader. The problem is you'll lead bad people. That's the only ones you'll attract if your reputation is not good. Regent University developed something they call the 4C model of leadership, Christian leadership. They say that leadership involves or requires, number one, competence. So that would be your skill set. Number two, calling. So that would be a sense that God has called you to do this thing. Has nothing to do with your skill, has to do with God's call. Number three, confidence. That is, knowing God has called me for this, I feel confident as a leader. And number four, character. Are you a man, are you a woman of character whom people respect? Here's what's interesting to me about that. That the whole skill set thing, which is usually what we put the most emphasis on as human beings, it's only 25% of the package. And if you have a great skill set and yet you have no calling to do that, no confidence in your ability to do that because you have no calling, and no character, you will fail as a leader. You will fail as a leader. Without strong character especially, leadership is short-lived. Leadership's tricky. It really is. There are a number of other reasons that leadership is tricky, but let's talk about what God says about just being a good leader. And one of the first things he says that a good leader does is he encourages people. A good leader is an encourager. And you know, as time goes by, more and more, I really see the essential nature of encouragement. I really do. Almost to the point now where I wish I could go back and be a dad all over again. Did you hear the word almost? Because, and I was a good encourager. You ask my wife, she'll say, man, Steve encouraged Tim and Esther really well. I would do it tenfold what I did before. Because I see the power of encouragement. Maybe that's why verse 6 says, similarly, encourage the young men to be self-controlled. And so I see that God believes that encouragement is an essential quality or an essential task for the leader. You may remember, if you were here a couple of weeks ago, several weeks ago, back in chapter 1, he talks about the people where Titus served. Titus does not serve in Kerwinsville. Titus served in Crete. It was an island in the Mediterranean. And listen to what he says. He says this. He says, one of Crete's own prophets has said it. Cretans are always lazy. They're evil brutes. They're always liars, rather. They're evil brutes. And they're lazy gluttons. Talk about a self-esteem problem. I mean, when one of your poets writes about you that you're liars, you're evil brutes, and you're lazy gluttons, just as a national identity, I'm thinking of people on Crete had some issues, right? No wonder Titus is encouraged. Titus is commanded to encourage them. Hey, I know you guys, you live on Crete, and I know there's just like an atmosphere of lying here, but you're in Christ now. You don't have to be that guy. You can be different. I know this is Crete, and I know that you're evil brutes, according to one of your own prophets, but you're not, and you're not, and you're not, and you're not, and you're not. You know why? Because Jesus changed you. And you can be a different person than your national identity says you can be. You can be holy. You can be pure. You can grow. You can influence. You can change. And you can change others along the way. Encouragement is essential. But beyond being essential, encouragement can be, at times, an intense thing. Have you noticed how polite we are as people? You probably haven't. If you've driven, you haven't, right? But you kind of see this in the past couple of generations, not generations, the past couple of decades. You've seen people that have, whenever you want to ask someone, hey, should we have dinner? This is how you say it. You don't just say, hey, would you and your wife like to come over for dinner tomorrow night? Here's how you say it. You say, you know, I'm thinking maybe we might ought to have something like, I don't know, dinner. And if you think that might be a good idea, or if not, whatever. You know, because we're just really polite. And that's kind of characterization of caricature. That's the word I'm looking for. That's a caricature of the way we talk to one another. We're not really in your face kind of people, especially as Christians, generally speaking. I have a theory. I have a theory that the modern translators translate verse 6 with the word encourage because it is softer that way. It's not an in-your-face kind of word to encourage someone. It's a soft word to encourage someone. But the older translations and the more specific translations, they don't use that word encourage. They use something that is more intense. King James used the word exhort. I want you to exhort young men to be self-controlled. Now, the difference between encouragement and exhorting is small, but it's significant. When you go somewhere and there's a child on the athletic field or even a teenager on the athletic field and his mom's in the stand, she's encouraging him. You can do it, Billy. I know you can. Run, 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 right? That's encouragement. His coach is exhorting him. Get out there! Just seeing if you're falling asleep here, right? Yeah. It's a different kind of a word. In fact, the more precise translations, they don't use the word exhort, they use the word urge. An urge carries with it a sense of urgency. You need to do this. It is urgent that you do this. And so leadership encourages taking into account how society communicates, but sometimes leadership that encourages has to get in the person's face. Sometimes it has to be kind of bold. Sometimes it can be intense. Side by side with that, a leader is an example. And you know, sometimes we make this mistake. We say, well, I lead by example, I just don't say anything. And you'll notice that Titus is told to do both. Because one without the other doesn't work. Leadership or communication without a life that backs it up, that's lame. And a life that just walks around trying to be Christian and never tells anybody why, that's pretty lame too. You need both of those things. You can urge people all day long, but if you're not exemplifying what it means to do it, it's not going to happen. One of my best friends in high school, his dad had this saying, and I heard him say it many times to him. His dad would say, do as I say, not as I do. What is that? How does that even make any sense? You know what I mean? Do as I say, not as I do. How do you think that leadership style went? How well do you think his son and his daughters and I, who heard that, and others, how well do you think we followed that leadership style? Without any example, your words are very hollow. But on the other hand, when you set an example, when you live the kind of life you're talking about, you can have incredible leadership influence. A guy I know did that when he went to the military. He was a Christian, and in the military, just like almost everywhere a man turns, there was a ton of pornography. Guys will tell you, man, you see it everywhere. When I worked at the bank, pornography. When I worked for the gas company, pornography. Everywhere you see it. In the military, pornography. So there he was, surrounded by that. He's a Christian. He's in basic training, and there were certain buildings, rooms where the walls were kind of plastered with it. What should he do as a Christian? Should he tear it down? Probably not. Well, what about this? Maybe he should make a scene. That's wrong, and I think you should take it down. Oh, man, can you imagine that in basic training? He would become a punching bag right now, and he'd have no influence. Bad idea. Maybe he should go tell the sergeant. Can you imagine that? Wow, that's not going to work either. And here's what he did. He told me, what I did is, just whenever guys would say, first I ignored it. I literally ignored it, Pastor Steve. I would walk right into the room and I put a hedge around my eyes so I never looked at the wall where I knew it was. I saw it once, never looked again. Because I don't want that in my heart. And then beyond that, when guys would say, and guys do this, they'd say, hey, did you see that? Man, she looks good. That's, wow. Like to spend, you know, and then they go on and talk about, you know. And he would not make a fuss. He'd just ignore it. And he would say this sentence. He would say, I have all I could ever need or want waiting at home for me. He exemplified a man who valued his wife more than sin. And a man who valued purity more than pleasure. And he wasn't in the military real long until he began being promoted over and over and over and over until he made a career of it. I think part of that is because he was an example of what it meant to be a good man. And his leaders saw it. Being a leader means being an encourager. It means being an example. It actually means being a teacher. In verse 7, it talks about, in your teaching, show integrity. And you know that integrity is being who you say you are. So if you're teaching people to forgive, you better be willing to forgive. And if you're teaching people to be self-controlled and you have a drinking problem, that dog won't hunt. And if you are teaching people to have a good marriage and you treat your wife or your husband poorly, you say bad things about him or her, that's just not going to work. When leaders, godly leaders, teach, they practice what they teach. Teaching is marked by integrity, and it's marked by dignity as well. Look again at the end of verse 7. It says, in your teaching, show integrity, comma, seriousness. Now, I seriously think it's unfortunate that the NIV uses the word seriousness there. Let me tell you why. Because I feel like that has trained multiple generations of people to feel like Christians can't laugh. And they can laugh maybe if they're at home watching a rerun of Andy Griffith. But certainly we ought not laugh in church. We shouldn't laugh when we're together. Be ye sober-minded. Seriousness. That's what we need. Now, that is not at all what is being communicated here. And I have studied this to the nth degree. Doesn't mean you can't joke. There was a guy who was a chaplain at Harvard. He was a chaplain also at Stanford University in the century of the 1900s, the last century. His name was Elton Trueblood. And he wrote a book called The Humor of Christ. I do not own this book. I got it on interlibrary loan. It's pretty short, maybe 60 pages or so. And I read it. It's a great book. It's a boring book. It's very scholarly. For someone writing a book on humor, he kind of missed the mark doing that particular book. But he explained something very interesting. He explained that humor is very cultural. And when you move in culture from one step to the next, you lose last time's humor. You know that's true. If you get a political cartoon from the 1800s and you look at it, you don't get it. You're like, that doesn't even seem funny to me. And the political cartoons, whether they're about Barack Obama or George Bush or Bill Clinton, or you go the whole way back, as we move away from those, we won't get those jokes anymore. Because jokes are very culturally centered. And Trueblood convincingly points out that Jesus joked a lot. For example, Trueblood says, and I believe it's true, that when Jesus said it's easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven, people slap their knees. That's great. Yeah, but that's not how you and I read it. We miss the humor and we go, therefore I tell you, it is more easy for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven. Who wants to hang around and listen to that preacher? You know? And over again, Jesus used humor. Jesus used exaggeration. Pluck your eye out, kid. Jesus used even sarcasm sometimes. He used those because they're great communication tools. So don't look at this and say, well, a leader needs to be very serious. Dignity is a much better phrase, term. Dignity. That means if you're a leader, you treat the people you're leading with respect. Treat them with respect. Whether they're kids in your Sunday school classroom, or whether you're teaching seniors, whatever you're doing, you treat those people as individuals made in the image of God who have incredible value as much as you do, leader. And it means that you can expect when you do that that those who are getting it will treat you with respect. Dignity. Leaders lead with dignity. They teach with dignity. Here's another quality here. Being above reproach. A good leader is above reproach. We talked about this. We'll look at verse 8. It's in the latter part of verse 8. It says, so that those who oppose you may be ashamed because they have nothing bad to say about us. Remember, God's already spoken about that back in chapter 1, verse 6, when he says that those who are elders are placed in charge. They should be individuals that are not open to the charge of being wild or disobedient. Their children should not. We use the word blameless when we talked about that, if you recall. And here's what that doesn't mean. It doesn't mean perfect. Blameless does not mean perfect. Otherwise, no one would be qualified to serve as a leader. Blameless means you're not the kind of person that people are always wondering about. You know, I just see a lot of holes in his life. Years ago, I was sitting in a nominating committee meeting, and a name came up, and this person's long gone, a name came up to serve as an elder. And I knew there were character issues there. Oh, I hate that. And his wife was on the nominating committee. I'm a dead man. And you know what? His wife says, he's not ready. And she began to weep. I wish he was. But there are some character issues there that open him up to accusation. And he's not ready for that position. It's not really perfect when you're above reproach. But it means you're not the kind of guy that make people, I'm not really sure he's ready. It means you're showing Christianity in your life. You know, this is a real dangerous one here. Real God, real life, real people, Kerwinsville Alliance. I want to own that, don't you? I want to be genuine. But then if you have this feeling in your mind, like I kind of maybe feel like God wants me, like I want to be a leader, then you can kind of begin to put up a mask, wear a mask. And now it's real God, real life, real pretender, right? It's, leadership's a tricky thing. Did I mention that earlier? It really is. I want to address some underlying realities with leadership. And I just want to tell you some things that, these are not explicitly mentioned in the text, but this text wouldn't be here if this weren't true, okay? And the first thing is this, that leaders are subject to attacks. You see it throughout the Bible. You see it throughout human history. Sometimes those attacks are justified when leaders fail and refuse to acknowledge their failures. Wow, they're really compounding them, and they kind of get what's coming to them, sadly, right? But on the other hand, sometimes they're wrongly attacked. Look at Paul. Look at Peter. Look at the disciples being beaten along the way, you know? Sometimes, and the reason is because, and I love this phrase, haters gonna hate, you know? There are some people, they just like to hate. I mean, you see it in the blogosphere. It is so disturbing when you see it sometimes. It happens more and more. I think our media really contributes to that. I think cable news, wow. They just bring on people there. It's like Jerry Springer, man. They just bring on people that have suits on that are going to just slam the opponent and hate them. That's just ugly. That's ugly on the news. It's hideous in the kingdom of God. But sometimes you see Christians reflecting that same kind of hatred. Maybe alleged Christians, for all I know, right? You know, David, he's a biblical figure. He's a king in the Old Testament. He was anointed king as a boy while Saul was still reigning king, so he knew that one day he would sit in Saul's throne. And Saul was not a good king at all. Saul was a very evil king. He even had a group of the prophets killed by Doeg the Edomite. Saul was very evil. And so David, David rightly could assume the throne, one would think. But David had this respect for leadership that he would not hunt it down. In fact, one time, Saul was in a cave covering his feet. How many know what that means? He covered his feet. Oh, man, the King James is lost on all but three of us. Yeah. He's relieving himself, okay? All right, covered his feet. That is the Hebrew idiom for that, by the way. That's not just the King Jamesism. So he's in a cave, he's in the dark, he's in private, and he's in there to relieve himself. And just as he does so, he does it right beside David, who he's hunting down, who's hiding in that cave. And David takes his sword and just cuts a little bit off his robe. And he could have killed him. Could have killed him. And I think he'd have been justified in it. Saul's hunting him down. But David didn't do that. In fact, cutting off the edge of his robe was an act that David so regretted, he later repented of it. Said, that was just wrong. And it's because David had this outlook toward leadership that said, I should not hate leaders. In fact, in Psalm 105, and I don't think David even wrote this, but it says in verse 15, don't touch my anointed one, do my prophets no harms. But through the years, man, that's kind of been laid aside, especially on the internet. Especially on the internet. You name the Christian leader, Ravi Zacharias, Rick Warren, Charles Stanley, any of them, and there's someone, some hater out there just ripping them on the internet, just tearing them down with all their might. It's interesting to me. There was one blog site that I kind of followed with regard to not my pastor, but the guy that I really liked who just recently resigned. I'd been following for the past several months that blog and seeing this coming, and I'd quit listening to my buddy at that time. I just really was troubled in my spirit. But I'd read those posts that this blogger was writing because he had an inside source and had some information. But as I'm reading it and I read the comments, the people commenting on the blog posts are filled with venom and hatred. Just, there's no other word for it. It is pure hatred. Here's what was very intriguing to me. We'll say that Billy Bob was the blogger, okay? Changed his name to protect the guilty. Billy Bob, you know, is writing all this stuff. These people are commenting on it and attacking the pastor that Billy Bob's exposing. And now the pastor leaves. He resigns. And guess what the people did? They said, well, Billy Bob, you don't have a reason to live anymore, do you? What is that? I guess you're pretty useless now, Billy Bob. Yep, nothing for you to do. The venom, the attack, just went straight to Billy Bob after that. Not all of them, but some of them. Why? Because haters are going to hate, man. It's just true. If you're a leader, be aware of that. Be aware of that. Here's third reality. I'm sorry, it's the second reality. Leaders mess up. If you're a leader, be aware you will mess up. You will. And if you know a leader, be aware he will mess up. There's this expression we have, keep your eyes off the guy, keep your eyes on Jesus. Keep your eyes off Steve Shields, please. Keep your eyes on the Lord Jesus Christ. Occasionally someone will come to our church and they'll greet me, and this is what I ask almost everybody, what brought you to Kerwinsville Alliance today, you know? And they'll say, well, you know, we're in the area, you know, or whatever. And and I ask that occasionally, just rarely, the reply will come back, well, we were going to such and such a church, and I was in a hospital, and that pastor didn't visit me. Put on the brakes right now. We need to talk. I want to tell you, I will fail you in at least that bad a way. Probably worse. Probably worse. Because I fail. Leaders fail. It is just a fact of life. That doesn't mean we should close our eyes to it. Doesn't mean we say, oh yeah, well, everybody fails. Let's just keep on going our merry way. No, it needs to be addressed. And I have had godly men, godly women, elders, even a district superintendent speak to me about my own failing through the years of ministry. So we don't close our eyes to it, but it means that we operate from a position of grace when it comes to failure. That we say, yeah, that was kind of goofy. That was a mistake. That was sin. Let's not do that again, right? Another thought, a reality about leaders is that God protects His own. A story that I heard when I'd only been in ministry for a few months was told by a guy who I consider to be one of my spiritual dads. His name is Dr. Charles Shepson. Dr. Shepson was speaking to a group of pastors in a pastor's retreat that I went to in 1986. This is how old this is. We're sitting there together, he tells a story. He says, I was in a church one time, and it was annual meeting time. And in the annual meeting, an individual got up And he just gave it to me with both barrels. I mean, he just verbally assaulted me all the way up the aisle and back down 10 times. Dr. Shepson said, I didn't want to defend myself and I didn't know what to do. And I looked and I thought, maybe someone else will speak. He stood alone in front of his church. No one was moving. And then a teenage girl stood up. She was weeping. And she said, that's not my pastor. And she gave her teenage perspective of her pastor and his heart of love. And as far as the congregation went, it did nothing. But as far as Dr. Shepson's heart, it did everything. Because in leadership, you will suffer attacks, but God protects His own. He protects His own sometimes by His corrective grace. He protects me sometimes by saying, whoa, Steve, that was dumb. Don't do that again. Okay, Jesus, got it. God, I won't do that again. Sometimes by His transforming power. He changes you as time goes on as a leader. I think back to some of the things I did as a young pastor, and I just shake my head. What gracious people I have pastored through the years, you know? Sometimes, and this has happened numerous times through the past 5, 10 years or so, sometimes I'll come into the house and Laurel will say, so how you doing? How did your visit go? Whatever. And I'll say, it went great. I got to tell you, if this was 25 years ago, we would be in real trouble. But God has really helped me to learn how to not put salt in someone's wound, but to put salve on it. God has really taught me how to pour water onto a hot situation rather than pour gasoline onto it. And I don't say that to say, so look at me, I'm your pastor, I know how to handle things. I don't know how to handle things for anything most of the time. But He does, and He transforms leaders. That is one of His ways of protecting His own. He helps you grow in leadership. Sometimes He does it simply by exposing your enemies. Sometimes that happens. That you might have someone who's working to attack you, working and working and working to attack you, and you're helpless. You can't do a thing about it, and there's no teenage girl going to stand up and defend you, and you're just like, ah! And out of the blue, God does something. You know, He did that over and over in the Old Testament. He says in Exodus 23, if you listen carefully to what I say and do, I will be the enemy to your enemies, and I will oppose those who oppose you. He protects His own. Now, in a few weeks, we're going to have a nominating committee meeting here at Kermansville Alliance. You're going to vote for two people on November 2nd at 6 o'clock in the evening. The board has already chosen two people. They choose two, you choose two. That position is incredibly important, nominating committee position. And so you have those four people who are there going to present a ballot, and that ballot will be placed before the membership, and the members will vote on things like elders, treasurer, board members, disciple-making ministry coordinator, outreach coordinator, head trustee, head deacon, those sorts of things. And those individuals will be leaders. Did I mention at the very start, leadership is tricky. And so I want us to just pray for those leaders before they're even put on the ballot. And I want us to pray for our existing leaders.